Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk USA. Are you tired of waiting for change? Tune into Blog Talk USA. Let your voice be heard on Blog Talk USA.
This is a national health alert from the 24/7 Diabetic Health Hotline. If you, a family member... This is a national health alert from the 24/7 Diabetic Health Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one has diabetes, listen closely. Now, regardless of your age, if you have insurance, you may qualify to receive diabetic testing supplies with little to no out-of-pocket cost. Get free delivery, free information, and all the paperwork is handled by our accredited suppliers for free. Call the 24/7 Diabetic Health Hotline now for details. But wait, there's more. If you call right now, you could get a free meter upgrade. In addition, we'll give you a free pedometer as our special gift to you. We have knee, back, and other braces available, as well as pharmacy services. Regardless of your age, if you suffer with diabetes and you have insurance, we can help.
888-303-9136, 888-303-9136, 888-303-9136, that's 888-303-9136.
Nobody really needs or wants home security until it's too late. You've heard the statistics about how many burglaries there are per day. You see the news. You know there are people out there that do bad things. The best way to help protect your home and your property is with an ADT monitored system from Protect Your Home, an ADT authorized premier provider. Call right now to get a free wireless home security system valued at $850. An ADT monitored system can help protect your home from fires, theft, floods, and call for emergency help. Call now to find out more about our $850 free wireless home security system and start enjoying the peace of mind of security today. Call 800-561-2351, 800-561-2351, 800-561-2351. This offer is for new customers only. Termination fees apply. $99 customer installation charge and 36-month monitoring agreement required. All for details. License terms and conditions available at secureathome.com.
Everyone to Blog Talk USA. We are so happy to be here with you on this marvelous Monday. Let me tell you how you can always find us and listen to our live programs and our archived episodes. You can always go to blogtalkusa.com. You can go to blogtalkradio.com/blogtalkusa, or you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Radio, anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find Blog Talk USA and Marvelous Monday under that banner. And one more thing before we get started for tonight, I do want to let everyone know that our dear, dear friend and brother, Brandon Johnson, has passed away on Friday the 15th. His battle with cancer ended, and as you all know, you all who loved him know that he went down swinging and with dignity and with grace. And he will be missed by so many. He was an amazing friend, an amazing brother, a wonderful son to his mother, an amazing father, an excellent husband, and just one of the most decent and good and fair and honest human beings I've ever known. He will always be missed, and he left us all quite a legacy. So we all have a little bit more slack to pick up to fill those shoes. He trusted us enough to leave us with unfinished business that he worked his entire life fighting for justice, for fairness, for equality, and for what's right. And everyone who listens to Blog Talk USA knows Brandon and loves Brandon and will miss him forever. Rest easy, brother. We love you. Okay.
Wow.
And
what a blessing.
He was a blessing to this world. It's a huge, huge loss. And Dr. Hagney, he unless I have this information wrong. I do believe that it was prostate cancer that he had. He was diagnosed last April. And it was already in later stages, so the prognosis wasn't great. But he, you know, I know he fought. And so just, you know, kind of reiterates what you talk about, with, you know, getting tested, being vigilant.
Wow, that is so true. We, it's amazing. Well, of course, we're in the middle of a big prostate project down here in Texas with Zero Cancer. And interesting, I just had a meeting with the students, medical students at University of Texas today. They're actually working on the information flyer and also a questionnaire. It's amazing what you just talked about. I'm going to send you a copy. They're developing the flyer, and also they're developing a survey to go along with the flyer. But it's covering a lot of issues about, of course, prostate cancer, why to get tested. It's going to be a very informational flyer, but also the questionnaire part, finding out what people know and need to know and don't know. And we're also part of that survey is going to be looking at individuals who are prostate survivors, what are their needs. And it's very interesting you mentioned that this coming Sunday at our church program, we're having two prostate cancer survivors who are speakers at church talking about the whole issue and discussion and everything. So it's so timely about this, and the need is so great because the factors in here, the number of people we are losing because to prostate cancer and because of prostate cancer, what can we put as far as information, education, we need to get some more information out there to our community.
Yes, absolutely. Well, as soon as I receive that information, I'll certainly post it on the show details and on any social media that I can post it on to get that information out there.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that.
When I church hub mentioned, you know, they were just talking to their males, and so many of their black males didn't even know PSA tests. Didn't know what it's
right.
And this is what this flyer is going to. It's just so much information need to be, and it's a blessing that we'll be able to work through our church hubs to get information out there, but just the information about prostate cancer, testing and all, everything go along with
yes.
You know, maintaining. Yes.
Yes, and I'll share with everyone, for example, Brandon, who, like I said, was diagnosed in April, he was my age, 45, I believe.
Wow.
And so, yeah, you know, this is, you know, that to some of our audience may seem old, maybe it is, but, you know, that's very young to be diagnosed, especially when if the emphasis isn't on or the focus isn't on being vigilant and encouraging young men, young black men, especially to test, it's, you know, it's not top of mind for everyone, I would imagine. I mean, you know, it took years and years to close the gap and get women to get mammograms, you know, by a certain age. It took even longer to target that information to black women and women of color to get their mammograms at a certain age. And we're seeing that same cracks and gaps for PSA testing. So this is really good information that you're getting out there. And let me also welcome Arthur. I see you out there. Your line is open. Welcome.
Well, hello. Yeah, my friend Brandon, I worked with him in NAACP for years. I've been knowing him. I was on his blog show a few times, and, you know, I talked to him after I, you know, heard about his situation, so we talked for a little bit. So, again, he's a true warrior, so, hey, Ashe to the brother.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you mentioned breast cancer. A group is coming to us to help them with a breast cancer survey. What we are doing, developing this expertise of developing type of surveys, information, and so we work with mental health groups. Now we're working with breast group, also dealing with the same issue you're talking about, the age group and some more specific information, why the test should be there. But one of the statements we make, the physicians have to play a role because historically the age for our PSAs for prostate has been a little older than 40, They're moving it down to age 40. But I tell everybody now, every black male, if you go to your physician, if you're that age, he or she should order a PSA test on you. One of the questions in that survey we're working on, if you've gone to a physician, you're 40, you're just like 40 and above, did your physician order a PSA test for you? And that's part of the role that physicians need to play in ordering these tests. It's also going to be the issue we are seeing with the breast component. So the medical group have a responsibility also to play in this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm sorry. Can everyone still hear me? I just caught my son on our computer trying to shut down our show.
It's an influencer that I posted on my page the other day that passed. A young lady. She went to the doctor a couple years ago, and they diagnosed with fibroids, right? Well, come to find out, it was uterine cancer. And I said this to say this. Unfortunately, our healthcare system is racist also, and we just don't get the attention. We don't get the research. We don't get any of that in our community. And it's basically because, you know, it shouldn't be called a healthcare system. It should be called a sick care system.
Yeah.
Because, we need a preventive health system, actually. And if we spend half as much money on preventive health as we do on pharmaceuticals that don't cure nobody, you know, but that's the game. The game is to make money, and it's unfortunate.
Right.
You know, the study's been done for years, so I'm not saying anything new. They did blind studies where they sent white and blacks in the same, it was the same condition, whatever, into the same, you know, and the results just different. And so again, we got to educate ourselves, doc, about how to go to the doctor, don't roll up in the doctor's office and say, doctor, what's wrong with me? Don't do that. So if you do that, you see what I'm saying? You need to own your body. Go in there. Own your body. You know, when you go in there and tell the doctor what you want to know, and then have him find it out for you. He's a tool. He ain't Jesus. He ain't none of that. So we need to act like Jesus.
Now, what is happening for the medical schools are recognizing their need to get involved. Because here in Texas, when you look at the lack of primary care docs, and the medical schools are recognizing that they need to interact with the community. That's part of the project that we were in the meeting today about for the University of Texas system, and UTMB, and a couple other ones. They are really addressing with their new medical school program to interact with the community. For example, if you look at the health stats, health reports, why blacks wind up on the bottom of all the reports is because all the million dollars spent in research, they don't include us in the first part of the study. But when you have to report the overall study, then you got to include the people you didn't include in the study. So that's why the numbers of deaths and all that and black prostate and all that is always going to be at the bottom. You know, if you look at all the national reports, you'll see that the blacks and others are at the bottom of those reports. Reason why that's the case because they're not included in those studies that are on. So all those earlier studies, they need individuals to represent the community, make sure communities are included in those earlier studies, and then that's how you're going to impact the results. But if you don't, all the million dollars of business spent in healthcare, whether new buildings, whatever, they are missing including individuals that's being addressed, affected by these areas. And so that they're recognizing that now. So in defense of the schools, they are really working, trying to include that. For example, the shortage of primary care docs in East Texas. University of Texas has a new medical school here in Tyler addressing that issue, trying to increase the number of physicians from rural areas in the medical schools. Hopefully they'll stay in practice in East Texas in the rural areas. So that's a rural problem across the nation. But there are universities recognizing they need to do more for including individuals like you just mentioned that's not included for different reasons. And also, so physicians have to understand these individuals. There's a book I always tell people, if you're going to do anything in East Texas, on education, whatever, you know, must read the book Plantation Life in Texas. That would identify the background history of the community. So if you address and are going to see these individuals, you need to understand the background, their background, and that to a certain extent is a factor. So that's why the schools are doing this, to reach out into the community, include individuals who normally, like you said, have been bypassed before, but they want to teach their young physicians the need in the community, particularly your minority community, your black community, Hispanic communities. And so they are, in defense of them, they are really working. But what they need individuals like our group to help them, because like they told me today, they really, well, there's a discussion, they don't know how to reach our community.
But Dr. Folks is causing the problem, though, is ain't them new doctors that you come out to spend the work on it. It's them doctors that's out here now. They're a problem.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
I need to know what kind of program we're going to have for them. They the ones
who go
to top of it, like you said. Basically, we're being given medicine that's not even for us. It's for a whole other group. They're giving it to us like it's for us. And that's another problem. Right, you know, and we're not being told, hey, look, you know, this wasn't studied on your people, but we're going to give it to you. Well, you know, if you tell me that, they might not would take it. So I'm just saying,
your pharmacist. The pharmacists need to be more active as part of your healthcare team, because we sort of see this in some of the areas where there are individual prescribing medications that need pharmacy consultation, clinical pharmacists. Pharmacists as a profession need to step up because they are the drug expert. See, in healthcare, individuals assume that even though the medical physicians write the drug orders, they're really not the drug expert. The people who go to school to be drug experts are your clinical pharmacists. The pharmacists in the Walgreens, CVS's, and all those, they need to step up because when the physician writes that order, they take that prescription to a pharmacy. A pharmacy fills that prescription. And so that's where that interaction about this is wrong medication, these are the interactions. So my major suggestion is the pharmacists as a profession need to step up and interact between the physician and the patient taking the medication. We see this as a major problem in mental health areas. So that was my recommendation there. Pharmacists need to become a part of the healthcare team. If you do a survey in American accent individual about individuals on survey on the healthcare team, chances are they're not going to list a pharmacist. They'll say physicians, nurses, and other groups. What need to happen to address it, what you're just talking about, that pharmacists need to be part of that healthcare team. When you write an order before that patient takes that medication, while they're taking the medication, a pharmacist, a clinical pharmacist, need to be in the middle of that. And I get back and they've been paid and all that's back in the money component, will they be paid for their services or whatever. But that's what need to be modified so that pharmacists will be in the middle of the drug orders and even development of these drugs. Because the pharmacist is the drug expert. They're the one that's going to spend all these years there in medicine. You know, medicine and medical school is only about 1 year.
Yeah, but if a person goes to a doctor every year and get a physical, and then they show up and all of a sudden they stage post something, something wrong with that. That's all I'm saying. That needs to be addressed. The system
depends. They probably didn't order the test they needed to order. And see, another thing you mentioned there's a need for a second follow up. You know, just what I'm experiencing. Just that first initial diagnosis. It need to be a follow-up to verify. That's what we'd be sort of seeing in breast and some other areas where people have been seen, but all of a sudden, later on, a person is diagnosed with advanced cancer. That means that test or somewhere it was missed. So that's another thing that just needs to happen. When there are any suspicions, for example, black female breast, you want to make sure don't just run through the first initial test, do the follow-up test. And that's what
we need to teach people how to go to the doctor. That's my point. I'm saying we need to teach people.
You know, the best place to do that is through our churches. And that's part of our task. We are 20 church hubs. The trust in America is in the church and in the pastor. but the churches need to step up and provide that service that the community needs. Historically, churches have always been that source of information, whether it be education, healthcare, whatever. Our churches need to get back to that point of providing that information, even having a discussion about when you go to a doctor, what you need to see in course and all that. And because individuals and churches are listening to the churches. They're not listening to TV and everything out here.
Let me tell you something happened to my auntie a couple of years ago when our daughter passed. The them jokers, they waited till it wasn't nobody around. And next thing we know, she done donated my relatives' organs or signs. Donate the organs. Then next thing they say, she passed. So they called me up and told me she had passed, right? So, so I go out to the hospital, and I go out there, and there she is, plugged up to all these machines, right? And I'm going, okay, they told me she done passed, and she's all these machines. Was she dead like that, or has she passed? I'm just saying, those are the kind of things that people need to understand. When you go to the hospital. It's all kinds of games being played. They want your organs. People need to know that. People know they want your organs. Mm-hmm. I mean, they need to know that. People need to know that they can. They want to. Now, from what I'm saying now, there's something new that I have read. But I think you can donate your body to science, and they'll pay you for it now. Now, I remember when they wouldn't. So I have to check on this. Somebody told me that they knew somebody did that. But I'm saying, when you go to the doctor, to the hospital, you have to understand that those are the kind of dynamics that's around you when you're in the hospital. Folks looking at you like that. And you didn't know that. You are now like, everybody ain't trying to help you. That's what you need to understand. So, hey.
That's right. I mentioned our church hubs. We have 20 church hubs. And what we also develop in those church hubs are health ministry. Every church of almost any size, need to have a health ministry in that church to address the issue you're talking about. You don't have to, in every church there's almost a nurse there, some healthcare person that's a member in that church. So you don't have to have all this, but we're working on starting health ministries in our churches to address the issue you just talked about. What happened when you go into hospital, visit an office, long-term care, what we're working is developing these health ministries in each one of these 20 church hubs to provide that information you just talking about, because there are individuals sitting in the church with nurses, physicians, dentists, pharmacists, whoever. Have them organize a health committee in that church, and then they can address issues like organ. What do you expect when you go into a hospital and insurance companies, when you go to a pharmacy or whatever like that? In churches have the space and time that they can step out beyond the wall of what they normally do and provide all the information that their members, for example, like our seniors, the federal government began to a certain extent paying much attention to our seniors. Your seniors in your church or in our communities, we need to start re-looking at our seniors, communicating with our seniors. There are a lot of seniors living by themselves now and all sorts of things going on with them. But your church, the churches can have a health ministry in there to look at all the health needs and also have brochures and literature that could be distributed.
Here I'm going to work you out. We're working you on it maybe, and I'm getting calls so we can put something together. But particularly black people, poor people, particularly black people I'm talking to, unless you're a millionaire and got a lot of money, you do not, when you hear their TV on, when they be on TV talking about these advantage plans and all this, that, and other, all the different companies, Aetna and all that, them. Unless you're a millionaire, you need to just hold on to your Social Security card. You need to acquire services with your Social Security card, because what happens is this, and I'm working with Marty right now. I'm going to get rid of some folks now. First of all, they take advantage of them because they, she got kind of Alzheimer's, so she be changing insurance all the time. But what they do is, they give you, when you sign up for that insurance, they say, we're giving you all this stuff. it's stuff like hearing stuff you don't need. They got a bunch of stuff in there, and then they take away your home health services and your nursing services. That's how they get paid. So you got to understand, that's how they get paid. They pay the services from you. Now, they have all this other stuff over there that sounds good, but it ain't what you need, and you don't even use it.
People in particular. You know, that's a workshop a church can have. See, for just what you just talking about, insurance? Yeah, a church on a Saturday can bring in individuals and educate their membership of exactly about what you're talking about. Insurance, coverages. But see, church is the most underutilized spaces built in the community. You know, and maybe once or twice a day to use it. But on a Saturday, there are educational workshops that you can have in the church to address the issue you just talked about. Insurance coverage and all those. And see, that's what needs to happen to get the information in our community. You can't rely on information coming from the other sources in the morning, because it has to be sensitive information about people who understand and also understand the need. And so church would be an excellent place to have those kind of continuing education programs. Bring in experts, bring in the people, all that. You can educate our membership. You know, you see all these, you imagine some of these major churches, you see how many workshops they have, how much information that could be disseminated on a Sunday. Mega churches, you know, because another thing, our political groups are going to have to get involved. I told a group the other night, we got to stop electing people who don't know anything about health care. See, the law, when you're talking about Affordable Care and health care and all those things, will pass through our Congress. So we got to start electing health care individuals to these positions that know what's going on. For example, insurance, you know, you're talking about Medicare, Medicaid. We need to elect people who understand what you just said.
Politicians are doing right here in your city. When you go to those, I'm going to tell you about Lancaster. I'm not as entitled, but when you go to Lancaster, go to the senior program out here in Lancaster. And when you walk in, they got this table, and everybody's on that table. Aetna and Humana, and all of them on that table. All of them. And see, and that's my point. You got, now I don't know if these people are giving the city money, I don't know what they're doing, but they're not looking out for seniors either. They're not looking out for seniors.
We don't go to the fox to fix the chicken coop. That's what we do in America. We go get the fox to help fix the chicken coop. What you need to do is have experts in there that you can have the Aetnas all over there, but you need the other side of the story, because they're going to be telling their side of the story. And this is where the elected officials are important. Have your conference, have someone there like yourself, part of the panel. Don't have a panel made of all the insurance people. They all gonna come out, you know, same answer. So you have a conference that you have a round table of experts from all walks of life, but also have somebody there who don't even know about insurance. See, our problem is the people who are in need, they're never included in the discussion. I was telling you, that's what's happening in our research a lot. A lot of times, blacks not included in the million-dollar research project that's supposed to be looking at us, but they don't include us. So you would need someone that's not even, doesn't know anything about insurance, but need insurance, be on the panel and tell her experience of trying to get insurance from all these people, because all those individuals, they all wind up going to say the same thing. But that's not going to help the situation. You need individuals who need insurance, need transportation, can't pay for insurance, don't have Medicare, all this. Because, see, there's another component. See, there are full finance health clinics that if you don't have, they have sliding scales. Individuals assume that if I don't have insurance, I got to pay all this money. There are full funded health clinics that you come in there, they can bill you according to what they call a sliding scale. And so but they have to be partnering with your group. And if you just go out to a straight, you won't have that. But people need to know that those facilities, we're partnering with one right now, all the health fairs. They bring a whole medical unit to our health fair. They can do all the tests there and there. But the important part they have primary care docs that they can refer to you to. Because you go and get tested and don't have a primary care doc, who are they going to refer you to? But this group we partner with, they have the whole medical unit. They can run all the tests and everything. And they have primary care docs that they can refer you to. And your insurance is on a sliding scale, almost down to zero. So, but people don't know that. That's the information that we need to get out to the churches. We're working on about six health fairs now in different areas of Northeast Texas at churches to bring all this issue and discuss all this in there. So that's how we need it. We need to use the octopus plan to solve the issues. That means you're going to address all of the costs, transportation, and the food, nutrition, all that. And then that, you know, you can talk about obesity, but if you don't include fresh, healthy vegetables and all that, you're just spending a little time there. But you have to use the octopus plan to address all these issues.
Yeah.
And I have to explain that. After I get that passion, you know, I'm going to explain the octopus plan to everybody. But that's how we have to address all these issues, the age group, our youth. We must find out a way to include our youth in all what we're talking about, healthcare, education, whatever, because they are our future leaders. More physicians in medical school, it's going to be our young people who we have to recruit into the medical school, the pharmacy school. So we must find a way to reach our young, our middle-aged people to get them involved in everything we're talking about and get them in, get their opinion, not us tell them what to do. We need to be able to listen to them and include their impact.
Well, Doc, one thing we have to do, we're going to have to, because I was telling somebody the other day about, you know, if you're going to build a new housing addition somewhere, before you know it, you're going to be driving down the street and you're going to see a Sonic, you're going to see a Wendy's, you're going to see a McDonald's, same mm-hmm. suspect. Ain't mm-hmm. none of that food still for nobody. Okay?
Yep.
But yet our society, our community is built around those types of places. And I'm saying, you know, we got to start teaching folks about you got to be living. It's clear, you know what we need to do.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it's a reason why we can't sell our beef and pork over in Europe and other places. You know, there's mm-hmm. a reason for that. Meat is cloned. You know, it's cloned meat.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying is that, you know, we need to understand, and they're not telling you, and they're not, they let you know that it's cloned, but they ain't telling you, they're not telling you it's cloned. And so basically,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're not eating healthy. And then, like I said, then they put these plates in our community. We got a whole key. We got a generation or two that's been raised on the strip food like that. And then you
that's
say,
true.
Well,
okay,
healthcare system, that's going
to tell you what,
we're in trouble.
One project we're working on over here, we're considered the struggle belt. Because of exactly what you just said, all the fast food villages. So this part of East Texas is considered the stroke belt, called the normal stroke that occur here. You're exactly right. We just had a meeting about that. Look at all the fast foods in a particular area. But there is a project we're working on with the USDA agriculture component is what we call community gardens, where you can raise fresh vegetables. We also tie in the educational component in there, the ag group. About healthy food, how you prepare healthy food, how you grow healthy food. But also, you look at a lot of this food that purchased in our grocery store is not produced in this country. And that's what people need to understand that. But again, you're exactly right. Diabetes, 40% of African Americans are obese. And a lot of it is associated with the type of food we eat and also the access to food. So we're talking about community garden. There's three sites. We're looking at community garden, teaching individuals how to raise fresh vegetables and also prepare fresh vegetables. So you're exactly right. Fast foods, we got to learn how to grow our own fresh vegetables, prepare our fresh vegetables. That's part of that octopus plan I was telling you about. See, you can talk about diabetes, you can talk about access to health care and all of the area, housing and all those components. But that food, that agriculture component is part of that leg to be discussed. And USDA, those groups, they are very interested in projects to re-educate our community about safe food, healthy food, how to grow food. But we have to have the systems in place in our community to work with agencies like that. And also, like farmers, you know, we look at farmers that could grow vegetables and farmers market, they can sell their products. And also, that's back to seniors, making that food available to some of our senior sites and complexes that they can get fresh vegetables, fresh fruit. But we are one of the projects we're going to try to include the 4-H group as a competitive deal. We need a banner. We're going to discuss competition, how they can design that banner to get our 4-H groups involved, what we're talking about, what you're just talking about, healthy foods and diets and all that.
May I jump in? Good evening, everybody.
Hello.
Shirley McKellar reporting for duty. It's great to hear Dr. Hagney's voice on tonight.
Well, I told you I'd be here, didn't
you? Yes, you did. You're a fan of your work. I tell guys I was sitting there filling out my paperwork and trying to pay my taxes, and there sits Dr. Hagney, one chair over from me, and it was a great reunion. And Dr. Hagney looks amazing, everybody. He's well taken. He's taking good care of himself. But I want to capitalize on this one thing. I think I heard Mr. Arthur talking about Europe and the lack of fast food in locations in Europe. Is that right, Mr. Arthur?
No.
I
said there's a reason why our meats can't be sold. They won't let them be sold over there because we put steroids in them, and it's pretty much cloned meat. So basically, there's reason why. I mean, there's reason why that some of our products cannot be sold globally. They was trying to get Bill Gates over there trying to get the Africans to buy some of that. What's on that modified corn stuff they do? And so here's what they're doing. This is what folks come to understand. They want to they want to sell them this stuff. But it's nothing that you can't. I believe it'll regrow one time. But after that, it won't regrow anymore. It won't even reproduce. So they got this modified stuff where they go after a while. It's only going to be a few companies that's going to be probably able to actually go and grow stuff, because all the other stuff they selling you, it won't do a repeat growth back. So this kind of modification food that we need to understand.
I remember when I was stationed overseas in 2003, when the big thing was McDonald's and everybody was rushing to buy McDonald's. They were so happy McDonald's was there, and the burgers were like $13 or $14 per burger, and people were buying them like they were $3 and $4 per burger. So the fast food was very popular with McDonald's in particular.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Oh God, you guys, I want to say something I'm very excited about. This is it happened to me today. My oldest granddaughter, she defended her PhD presentation at Rutgers today. It was on Zoom. And I tell you, just imagine you defending your PhD, 7 years of research on Zoom. It was at Rutgers University Department of Sociology. Her name is Dr. Indy Hayes. I just have to tell the world about it. Her title was The Sixth Senses, a comparative study of 19th to 21st century Afro-Texan feminine sensory. I can't pronounce it. HEPA is a whole big word here. But just to see her defend her.
Yes, doctor.
Her study there. They had faculty on the committee from Yale and Rutgers and all that, asking all those questions. I just want to tell you guys that I'm still flowing with the appreciation to see my granddaughter.
We can hear your voice.
Just amazing. I just had to put that in there. I'm sorry.
Don't you be sorry. That's amazing. You go, doctor. Family of doctors.
Isn't that beautiful? Beautiful. Beautiful.
Awesome.
Congratulations to your granddaughter. Dr. Adney, that's big stuff right there. Big stuff.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really is.
Okay, thank you. Wow. Thank you.
Yes, yes. Well, we're peacock proud, just like you are, to see our folk excelling and soaring to greater heights. So she will be a great inspiration to other young folk. How may I ask how old she is? And she won't know that we're asking her age. We don't even know her. So okay.
She's 29. She's 29. Her undergrad degree was from Spelman. Her master's from Rutgers and a PhD from Rutgers. And she's also has to spend another year at Dartmouth in postdoc setting.
Oh yeah, that's a great school. Well, that's great school. Well, outstanding. Well,
doing things. And what a contribution to our knowledge. I mean, that's such a focus. And I know, you know, all dissertations are focused, but that's some serious, valuable knowledge, in particular for Texans. It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And I'm delighted to call another female doctor.
Yeah.
I'm a delighted.
Yes.
And in particular,
absolutely,
one of color.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's beautiful. That's right. So Ms. Rihanna just told me that we gave homage to our beloved Brandon Johnson at the onset of our show, and I just want to piggyback, if it's okay, on to the fact that it was very heartbreaking to lose Brandon, a very brilliant young man, a great radio personality, but not only just that, I mean, just he was just academically astute and just really, really smart. I know that family very well. His family hails from right here in Tyler, Texas, in the surrounding areas here. So even though he lived over in Longview, but his family hails out of Tyler. So I knew some of his family members in my younger days, and so we're just really sad. Brandon is a very young man.
Yes.
And so we were just talking about today how people are leaving and death has no respect of age at all. A lot of younger people are leaving, just like our very senior people, you know. So thank you all for remembering Brandon. So Ms. Rihanna and I were saying, first there was Mr. Donnie Walker, and now it's Mr. Brandon Johnson. And so those are two great, great people that we have lost very recently. So, okay, is Pastor Cooper on tonight? And is Dr. Carr on tonight?
Let me see. They weren't on. Nope, not yet.
Okay. All right. Okay, we sometimes
have to.
And
if you are, please press 1. I don't see them on there, but sometimes they sneak up on me, so y'all press 1 when you
well, I think
get
it would have it would have addressed if they had been on. Well, we are working really hard to get ready for our international Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority convention. I almost said boule, but you may not know what that means to me. But our international convention that's going to be held in Dallas, Texas, July 5th to the 12th. And so I was on that Zoom. I'm always on that Zoom on Monday night prior to getting on online. But it is going to be an amazing convention that's going to be held at the convention center there in Dallas, Texas. So for anybody that's in the area, that I invite them to come to our public meeting, because we are going to be honoring some very viable people, in particular during our regional conference, which is going to be on April the 25th, and our present regional director is going out. She's served all of her years, 4 years, and so she is coming out. That's Miss Joya Hayes. And so we're going to have Dr. Frederick Haynes. That's our fraternity. Isn't that your fraternity brother, Mr. Arthur? Mr. Arthur, are you still there?
Yeah.
Dr. Frederick Haynes is your fraternity brother, right?
Yeah, one of many.
Yeah, one of many, right. So Dr. Frederick Haynes is going to be the public speaker for the regional conference, which will be in Austin, Texas, on April the 25th. And everybody knows that he's a powerhouse when it comes to the microphone and civil rights. And so so we're just excited about it. So that's where I was. And so I think you may have forgotten that I was going to be a little late coming in because Mr. Arthur sent a note and said, "Where's Shirley McKellar?" Where in the world is Shirley McKellar? That's where, you know, Matt Lowry used to be all over the world, and then they say, "Where in the world is Matt Lowry?" By the way, where is Matt Lowry? Think of it. I know he's no longer on the morning show, but anyway, that's where I was, Mr. Arthur. So let's talk about what's going on. What on earth is going on in the world of election? We know that this is a crucial, and we say this all of the time, that this is a very crucial election. But let me just tell you that this is probably the most crucial election that we will ever have in the history of this country, simply because our democracy is on the line. We see so many things taking place, so many things happening. We know that it looks like President Biden is going to be our nominee for the Democratic Party, and it looks like Donald Trump is going to be the nominee for the Republican Party. And we're hearing a lot of things from Donald Trump, and so let's dialogue a little bit on that election. Let's talk about, first of all, let's talk about Texas. I know Miss Rihanna is the only one that actually does not live in Texas, however, except for Dr. Carr, but he's not on with us right now. But Miss Rihanna hails from Texas, and so several things that are taking place. We know that the governor of Texas was in the I think he was in the news today talking about DEI. And so can we start out first with DEI and what that actually means, and then we can go to the election. We know that this is an election, presidential election year, but we want people to understand and realize that even though this is a presidential election year, how important it is for us to vote every single time, when it's the senators, when it's the Congress people, because if you really want to boil down to brass tacks, I'm not even that concerned about the age of President Biden, even though he's done some amazing work, and a lot of people don't even realize what all he has done. But the people who really run our country, and of course the president is always going to have the right people in their office to help to carry out the various and sundry parts of his administration. I say his, I say this all the time, I say his administration because we've only had men. So just remember how important it is to have the right people in Congress and in the Senate. And we hear and see people dropping out of the Senate, dropping off, retiring, just going to leave. And basically most of these are Republicans. But let's talk about DEI. And first, Ms. Rihanna, can you give us a definition of what those acronyms are? Or what does D represent? What does E represent? And what does I represent?
DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yes, ma'am. And so now that we know that universities, not just in Texas even, but universities maybe in other parts of the country, I'm not sure, but because we're in Texas, we're talking about Texas, and we know that particular department, which is equity, civil rights, people who should have been admitted into the universities sometimes did not get admitted into the university, so they fixed it where you had to have X amount of people of color to be able to get admitted into university. So now all of that department now has been done away with in the state of Texas. So I'm going to start with you, Mr. Arthur, and tell me what your feelings are about that. I'm sure that you've been tracking that on the news. And
Well, it just happened. I wrote, you know, one of my articles that I wrote with the North South Gazette was pertaining to that. It was called white supremacy, a longest running affirmative action program in history.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Excellent article. And based on the fact that, okay, now DEI, which is the latest iteration of us trying to, get some rights and so forth. And that's the backdrop. The backdrop is, okay, why do we need DEI? Why do we need it? We need it because America was built on affirmative action for white people. And so whenever we come up with whatever it is, affirmative action, DEI, whatever it is, first of all, and it's just the truth, white women benefit from it more than we do. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I guess now the white guys, they don't want white women to benefit from it, I guess. I know they don't, because they took Roe v. Wade from it and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just saying that we, realize what this is. It's not it's pretty clear what's going on. The powers that be, the folks that's in this rigged system, they want to keep it rigged. And all they keep it rigged is keep people ignorant. And so that's what the program's about, keeping folks ignorant or keeping folks fighting against each other. So we just got to be smarter than that. And I'm hoping that in this next election, here's my position. Black folks, yeah, we need to come out and vote. We need to do our part. But it's really going to come down to white women. What are white women going to do? Because they have the power to change that whole dynamic. So I'm watching white women see what they're going to do with DEI.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Ms. Riley, you have something to add to that? That's interesting.
I think that's very well said. I know I've said on this program several times, my mom, when she was able to get her GED after having kids really young and being able to go on to Eastfield Community College and then eventually to SMU, she said more than a handful of times she would be in class, one time in particular, a racist young white guy in the class was making comments at a young African-American female student about how she must just be there because of affirmative action. And my mom happened to personally know that this was a student who was there on a full scholarship. both of her parents, I believe, were surgeons, and she was on a pre-law track or pre-med track, I can't remember, but she had a full scholarship. They were begging her to go there. And my mom said, she had to say more than once, and in that case in particular, to people like that, it's funny because I'm actually the one here because of affirmative action. Me. That would be me, the old white lady here. And, Arthur just really makes a solid point. We know that white women certainly played a key role in electing, the fascist Donald Trump. So it'll be interesting to see, now that they've had so many things threatened and taken from them because of that choice, it'll be interesting to see. We saw what white women can do when they decide to put the good behind them and stand with people we're supposed to be standing with. We see what that can do. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what tips the scales here in this election. I think that's just such a good point. That is where it lies. That is exactly where it lies, historically speaking.
Sure.
So it's up to us white ladies here.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. Dr. Hadney, you have some comments?
Oh, I'm excited about this education component. You know, I'm an HBCU product.
Yes.
Proud to say.
Yes.
When you move back in history, and if you really understand American history, you know, this higher education system started in our black churches in our community. And back in those years, the top black professionals graduated from HBCUs.
That's right.
They're part of my age and above. This is a golden opportunity. For some reason, I don't know why we thought we'd get educated because we attended some other institution. That's why I'm so proud of what my granddaughter did today.
Sure, exactly.
You know, that, what she touched, she, as some of a lot of professors, see, we have to move and think about what the future and develop people for the future. She touched on some historical things in Texas that related to how black bodies responded to a lot of the slavery components. Even the Ballard Center Center, what was going on with the Yellow Rose of Texas when Texas independence was fought for, which is not in Texas history. I tell people, you do people a favor by really not looking at Texas history book because there are too many gaps in it. So I'm excited. I think, you know, COVID, one thing we should learn from COVID, COVID showed us the people who we thought we got new then and don't know. And so what that tells us as individuals, it's now time for us to move forward. Move forward. I tell the black churches, you know, most underutilized space in a black church on the weekend or whatever. So where do we get the idea that we're going to get educated by sitting in class with someone who don't look like you?
Right.
COVID proves
right.
That's not the case. We have to start doing things for ourselves and not expect somebody else going to rescue us, protect us. We've shown, you know, where we compete, we excel. They don't allow us to that in sports. They recognize that in sports. And then all these universities who dismantle these programs in their colleges, what are they doing to their sports department? What would you do to the schools in Texas if you dismantle those black kids from playing that football or basketball?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, when it comes to education, we get, I was down in Houston the other day, they were talking about closing libraries in the black neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Firing librarians in the black area schools in Houston. But nobody talked about sports. So therefore, you know, you give us credit for having excellence in sports, but reading the book, we have a problem with that. Reading why the problem with that is really is to stamp out, to prevent young blacks doing what my granddaughter just did. They don't want us to think. That's American history. I think a lot of people slept through American history. If we go back through American history, what is it they didn't want us to do when they brought us off the slave ships? And that's always been the case. It hadn't been for Rosenthal, who created all the 5,000 Rosenthal schools in the South.
Mm-hmm.
Julius Rosenthal. Look at the schools they created and look at the product of those schools. It's time for us, you know, let them have the DNA. You know, let's do things ourselves. You know,
jump in at Dr. Hagley because you're 100% correct. Because let me just tell you, we heard Miss Rihanna say that her mother went to school because of DIA. But let me just DIE, or affirmative action is what we recognize that term. But I can tell you unequivocally, I went to school on a Minnie Hutnell Foundation scholarship, And every degree that I have, I was on a scholarship. I did not get that affirmative action that they say that we're in a school because of numbers. I was in a school because I academically prepared myself, because my parents made sure that we studied to bring in grades that would,
yes,
would give us the ability to be able to get scholarships and go to school on them. And so so I proudly say that every degree that I have, I went to school on a scholarship. So it is true that other people, like Mr. Arthur says, other Caucasian women get the opportunity to appreciate the work that our ancestors did, and they did the, and our ancestors did that work in order for us to have affirmative action. But they wanted, but once again, they want to take things away from us. So yeah, that's why we have to reach our children way down in elementary school, way early, even reach
exactly
them at home. And if, mm-hmm, if we can have parents to understand that they got to work with them from the cradle. So that they will,
yeah,
be prepared. We work to try to keep our children out of the criminal justice system and put them on the right side of the law instead of on the wrong side of the law, because that's that pipeline that we all are familiar with, right? Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You know, this idea now that no pass, they're passing kids that should be failing. How many people know,
yeah,
in the public schools nobody's failing anybody anymore?
That's right. That's true.
You know, how we accept that student, and the students are very intelligent. They know you're going to pass them anyway. They don't even go to class. They don't even take exams.
Well,
that's not only in high school. That's also in our junior school. I'm sorry.
Well, let me just say before you go too far down there. Okay, what about the kids, not the ones you're talking about, I'm talking the one that's actually out there doing the right thing.
Doing the work, okay.
Okay, now the problem that these kids have and the problem we need to focus on is that as brilliant as they are, they can't scale. They can't economically scale. The system is set up where they can't scale. We're basically corporate slaves, what it amounts to, and in our community we can do a lot of stuff that we're talking about, and you know it, Doc. We can do this ourselves, okay?
Yep.
But the system is not set up to help us do that, you know. And a perfect example that always comes up. Remember, America not tied to the gold standard; they just print money. That's why whenever we decide, when we say, "Hey, look, we need a Marshall Plan for our community." We can't get no feedback on that. But if a war pop up, or if they got somewhere to go spend some, all of a sudden they got all this money. Okay, that has, you know, that's something deeper that we need to deal with. Who, why is that? I mean, I already know why. I'm being rhetorical. Why is it that they don't want us to be able to scale and help ourselves? Why is that? It's because we're like a AAA farm team in the baseball league. Or one of the, you want the XFLs or whatever. They just reach down and pull up stars whenever they want to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in a minor league situation. I'm saying we need to focus on, we give it our politicians and find out why is it that we can't, with all our brilliance, we can do it for everybody else. You know, I went and saw that movie, the Magical Negro Society to make white people's lives better. I encourage people to go look at that. It's a real movie. It's going to be simple to understand, and you're going and it goes back to what I'm saying. Why is that we can't do that for ourselves? There's a reason for that. That's all I'm saying. We need to check out what that reason.
You know what? You know what that reason is?
Oh yeah.
I've been telling all as long as you playing marbles in your neighbor's backyard, you're never going to win.
And it's set up like
I
that.
I tell people, well, it's set up. You can change the game. See, that's what COVID showed us. We didn't learn from COVID. We keep crawling over our neighbor's fence, playing marbles in our neighbor's backyard, and we get excited. We get shocked when we win 48% of the marbles. They change the rules, like DA and all this, and tell you to go home. If you're so good, why you have Why you had to? Why we have to? Why we have to?
We're going to talk about the district attorney and Fannie Willis and all of that issue and after we finish this conversation.
COVID is telling us. COVID told us.
One
at a time.
You know, credentials and all like that. No matter, you know, and she's being treated like this. And that's, I mean, that's the only point I'm trying to make about that. I'm saying that it's the same, you know, all over. That's all I'm trying to say. You know, and she can't scale.
And not only that, let me just tell you that if in fact, well, we can go ahead and talk about this now. If in fact that she and Mr. Wade, Attorney Wade, established a relationship, and I'm talking about an intimate relationship in 2019 before when they said, then they should have said so and said, you know, maybe that was a wrong move, and we wouldn't even be hearing too much more about this, and I'm going to tell you why we wouldn't be hearing too much more about it, because it's not unusual for relationships to establish with people in every of the workplace, from the medical to the legal, mm-hmm. to everywhere, mm-hmm. all over the place. We can even take it back to Clarence Thomas and how his relationship ended with his first wife and how he ended up with this present wife. And so if in fact that relationship did establish, then I just wish they would have said so. But by the same token, I agree with her 100%. She was not on trial, okay? And Mr. Arthur made a little comical statement about it. He said district attorneys need love too. Well, I mean, relationships do develop in the workplace, do they not? Does anybody know of any? And to include in Georgia, in California, Texas, every state in the union, we've seen that. Mm-hmm. And
hey,
so
sir,
if they say, go ahead. Start
hey,
ahead.
So I'm cleaning it up, but my grandpa told me back in the day, I was about 16, 17, I was going to first it up. He said, he said, Arthur, now what do you do? You know, don't crap where you eat. And, you know, and so basically what he was saying was, don't be on the job trying to go with nobody. You know, I'm trying to handle relationships on jobs. I mean, that's what he told me.
And that was good. That was good information. But we know that it happens because human beings with feelings and people establish feelings and they end up marrying people where they in the workplace and all of that. We know that that exists.
Earlier, what we're talking about, the way she was treated, you know, they folks don't. They don't. I mean, it's the way that she's been treated. I'm just saying, Obama got disrespect. He was president. Yes, so any kind of disrespect.
Right.
So the fact of the matter is, no matter where we get to in this system, and up to this point right here today, you can pretty much expect to be disrespected at the first chance that. You know, that folks get. I mean, I'm saying that's something we have to be aware of, that's what that is. And you ain't never going to be, quote, in, wherever in is. You ain't never going to be in. So go see the movie, The Magic Negro Society, Make Black People's Lives Better. And I think your life would be better. Go and check it out. Because, I'm not going to get a part of the movie away, but the worst thing that could happen to you in this movie would be for them to wipe your mind clean, right, and then send you back, and you just be just a regular, everyday Negro.
Mm-hmm. Whatever that means. Whatever everyday Negro means. I don't know what that means. But what do you know what that means? I have no idea.
Whatever you
what
doing, that means. Doing, you go back to doing it. You're hustling, whatever you're doing. Go back to doing that, whatever it was. But basically, just says that this base says that, and we do. Cause I know, you know, and all black folks can relate to it because we do. We have the ability to make white people feel better about history and all the other stuff that's going on. Do you remember DeSantis said the same thing? He said, we don't want to teach this history because it makes our kids feel bad. Well, that's the same thing. You know, that's that, you know, so he want us black people to go along with what he's talking about so they can feel better. So he's a great example.
But people are not accepting that.
Well, no, I'm not talking about people accepting. I'm just talking about the culture, how it operates. You know,
yeah,
because being black, you know, we know, look here, being black, we know a lot more about white people than they know about us, actually. Why? Because we've had to learn these things to operate our lives within the context of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been like that. And so,
right. And so
we know more about white people than they do, probably about their, they know about themselves probably. And so, and that's all.
Mm-hmm.
And
so we don't act like. We don't act like. That may be true, but why don't we act like?
Well, what I hear Dr. Hagney saying is that black people should use that to their advantage, right, Dr. Hagney? Because we don't
exactly. Yeah, if you know something, if you know more than another person, why don't you use it to your advantage? Why we keep crawling over the fence, playing with their marbles, and get upset when they take the marbles and change the rules on us when we start winning more than 40% of the marbles? That's not documented that you know more about it. Anybody, you know, even in the animal kingdom, you know, something about the other one. They're not gonna be managed by the other one. That's not an indication you know more about a person if you're gonna be that person's slave.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr.
Okay. What it looks like, Doc, is that you know, the people that do what you're saying, take advantage of it for themselves, it's called, it looks like, I ain't saying this word, but it looks like they're, quote, playing the game. And you just said, you know, if you play on somebody else's mark, then how are you going to expect to win? But we'd be expecting to win even though we're playing on somebody else's mark. So I'm just saying, but that's just the dynamics of it. I ain't judging nobody. I'm just saying that's just what it is.
Mm. Right.
Maybe we can change
talking about. Yeah, we were talking about that earlier when we were talking about the stroke belt and safe food and we owning things. And there was a discussion, why don't blacks own more of the restaurants that prepare fresh foods? And why we flock into the fast food those why don't we start doing things economically for ourselves? You know, classic example, I tell people, the future of Texas is East Texas. That's the case is because the East Texas has plenty of land. Texas has the major source of fresh water. I tell everybody in East Texas, well, you better protect your fresh water. And if you look at the growth of East Texas, it's East Texas, but you have minorities in East Texas. We have the opportunity to move forward. Sometimes we lose our land. I mean, the blacks own a whole lot of land in East Texas.
Yeah.
There's a need to teach blacks, for example. They're building, I'm going to give you an example. I can almost see some land that used to sell for $50 an acre. You know what that land is selling for now? $200. Mm-hmm. And homes are being built. I just look at a home yesterday being built and sold at $450,000.
Mm-hmm.
On property that land used to be $50 an acre. And you know, see, so that's that part of not planning, knowing what the future holds. And if you know so much, start implementing. Every black who owns land in East Texas, somebody better hold on to it. If you're black in Dallas and you own land in East Texas, you better, any kind of way you can, help your grandparents hold on to that land. Because land throughout East Texas, after a while, it's going to be unbelievable. Of the homes, and so that's just part of not playing, your own rules. You know,
you're right about that, Dr. Hagney. That's why Tyler, Texas, is the number one place in Texas to move to. This is the number one place to live.
Mm-hmm.
In Texas is Tyler, Texas, which sits in the heart of East Texas. And you're 100%.
You know, Shirley, you know what's going to happen, Shirley? Yeah, yeah, y'all going to be like a Metroplex. Y'all going to be an East Texas Metroplex.
Exactly. Well, what we already call, I mean, Tyler Longview is already like Dallas-Fort Worth in
That's
the competitive
thing.
Mm-hmm. We're already, and you're absolutely correct. They're going to be connected to each other in just a little while.
So call y'all the new Metroplex here in a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, another point I mentioned, they were saying an election deal, County, Cherokee County had to, the increased number of voters.
That's very good. But let me just share this with you, that out of 100% of voters in, I can't remember if it's Smith County or if it's in East Texas, and perhaps we were looking at figures of Texas, and then we were looking at figures of Tyler. And then if you want to look at party line, the Republicans had 13 or 14,000 voters during early voting compared to the Democrats having 5,000, a little over 5,000. Look at the difference. That's why you end up having the same people running the state of Texas, because we don't get out. We can't get our people out to vote.
Mm-hmm.
We don't. We have more registered Democrats in East Texas than anything else. And really in Texas, period. There are more Democrats in Texas than Republicans, but we never win statewide seats on the Democrats. Go ahead.
I say, we've had that conversation. Remember, on to East Texas?
Mm-hmm.
So we know
on to East Texas.
There's a reason for that.
It's time for people to stop ignoring East Texas. We can't get any money and any funding brought in here, but we're an ATM machine, and they come and get the funds and take it out and send it across to other states. But we can't get any in here because.
Well, what I'm saying is that you know what East Texas is gonna have to do. Y'all have to identify yourself and explain to them, to the Democratic Party in particular, if they're not going to come and help down the infrastructure, done it
all the way to Washington D.C. done it all the way Austin, Texas, done it, still hasn't happened.
My point is it ain't happened yet, but it's gonna happen, but it ain't happened yet. And I'm saying it hadn't happened when we did the Bull Connor thing. It hadn't happened yet. So I'm saying that we hit it somewhere, so I'm telling you
I agree with you.
My question is,
why it hasn't happened? You know, this is nothing new. What are the National Party waiting for them? What are they looking for? They're going to expect us to come out and vote, right?
Let me answer that. What they're looking at, the reason why they don't put money into East Texas is they're looking at how well we can get the people to the polls to vote. I just gave that prime example of the fact that the Republicans had that X amount, and then the Democrats had that X amount. Now the Republicans get money in here.
Yeah, but
it's the party that doesn't get money in here.
Why is it like that? And I like to explain to him why it's like that. But that's what he's asking. Doc, the reason it's like that is because back when Ann Richardson was governor, right, when she was governor, the Texas Democrat state and all like that, the George Bush, Bob Bullock, you know, all them cats, Rick Perry and all of them, they got together because all of them was Democrats then.
Right.
And overnight, something became Republicans. Okay? Sister Farenthal, the late Sister Farenthal, you know, she stated that it was going to become an ATM machine. The Democratic Party hadn't even tried, Doc, to win, hadn't even tried, Doc, to win elections since the what? Well, was that the 90s? Since the 90s, hadn't even tried. And so, roll it up. Okay, roll it on up here. I ain't going to go through some of that stuff in between, but roll it on up here now. Bush president. Beto shows, you know, he gone now. That lady that did that speech, she's the first spark of something here in Texas, the one that did that speech on the floor. And then after that, you had Beto run. Now, remember now, ain't nobody even tried to win in about 30 years. And the Democratic Party made a deal with the Democrats here in Texas to be an ATM machine. And we still haven't overcome an ATM machine. Now, if Aria can win, then that's going to be the first time that we've overcome just being an ATM. But that's how we became an ATM. I want you to know how it got like that. I joined the Coalition of Black Democrats, and they were talking about, after Ann Richardson left, and they were talking about raising money for the National Democratic Party. And I told myself, I'm not going to get on my money.
There you go. Yeah. And I'm not either.
You know, I'm not doing that. You know, so I'm trying to tell you that how it got like that. So that's how it
got like that.
Now, how do we get it like that now? You know, so that's where we're at now.
I have a question. You know, the Republican Party,
Go ahead.
You know, the Republican Party put a survey into their voting election. A lot of people are showing up to fill out that survey. Now, the Democratic can't, why don't they look at putting a survey? In other words, you find out what the grassroots people need or want. That's what the Republican found, a lot of information with that survey from the previous election. They got a lot of people just going to fill out that survey. And so that's something the Democratic Party need to look at, need to hear from the people. In the future, I think that'll be another point I want to make is that, I tell a group the other day, everything is local. We need to look at the committees, like the beautification committees in these cities, local components and everything. We get excited about electing national people and everything, but the day-to-day operation of a city, beautification, economic development, all those committees, how many blacks, how many Democrats on these local city committees? Because that's where the money is spent. That's where the results is shown. And what we're going to do here in this area, start identifying every position committee that's available in each one of these counties, and then start looking at getting people elected to the beautification committee, economic development committee, trash committee, and all those kind of deals, because that's where people relates to. If your neighborhood is dirty, clean, you need help, so that's my recommendation. All these local committees across at the city level, see where those openings are and get people into those positions.
Well, I'm just glad
Let's take it to the city level. Okay, every single one of us who are elected on city council gets to a point, even though city local is not Democrat or Republican, but everybody that serves on these positions are either a Democrat or a Republican. They vote one way or the other, right? Because we only have two-party system.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to a point. So if you only have, just use as an example, if you have two Democrats, and the rest of them are Republicans, you're going to have more Republicans on these committees because each council person gets to appoint from their district, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it goes. I believe you have one Democrat Smith County Commissioner, and the rest of them are Republican.
Okay.
And they are Democrat and Republican.
Mm-hmm.
So guess what you're going to have? You're going to have more of one.
Mm-hmm.
But it all
and
comes
then
down to
have
hand.
People heart. Of both hearts. You can't. People don't support to help Democrats win elections. They don't donate and give because they don't see the need. Maybe they don't understand the need for
yeah.
There's more money floating on the Republican side than the Democratic side, so therefore you get more Republicans elected to office.
And that's because you got Republicans, you got Republicans and Democrats, blue dogs, whatever you want to call them, that's actually been working together all these years, and they still
mm-hmm.
working together. Is what I'm
mm-hmm.
telling you. Just saying, and that's why I say we have to actually. For what our community needs, we have to organize our power independent of that biorhythm, because otherwise we just be getting taken for granted every time. So we need to focus more on how do we get our people to come out to vote.
That's
catch
mm-hmm.
it, what's, you know, what they need and how to
mm-hmm.
understand it or to get it. That's, you need to do this for me so I can get this for you. And so that's kind
mm-hmm.
of what we're going to need. Our community. As long as we waiting on the Democratic Party to come organize us, we in trouble. That's all I got to say. You know what I mean? So because they're not going to do it. Putin ain't going to do it. And why would they do it? You know, why they say, why buy the whole cow? You can milk through the fence.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's it.
So we get milked. That's all I got to say.
I tell you what, we got a serious election coming up in November. A very serious. And then you have Mike Pence who stood up and said he would not be supporting Trump. And then he said, and I won't be voting for Biden. So who are you going to throw your vote away to? You're going to throw a vote away, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well,
you'll put your own name on there. You're throwing away a vote. All you're doing is helping the person who you're trying not to help, and that's
exactly.
All you're doing
mm-hmm.
is helping them.
That's right. That's
and
exactly.
He, and he understands politics as well as anybody else, the rest of us.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah. He knew what he was saying and why he said it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Yep.
Did you guys
I have a question because I'm not following. What's happening to Haiti? What's happening in Haiti?
Yeah, let me tell you something. Haiti. Because I've been asking that same question, Doc. I said, okay, now I know about how they got free and French and all them was mad at them for being for
mm-hmm.
getting their freedom. I said, but
right.
I remember George Bush now, LACP, we spent 10, 12 years getting Aristide put in, and then Colin Powell went and just threw him out. And I've been
mm-hmm.
trying to figure out what is that about. Now I've heard about this, the bourgeoisie, mulatto tax, whatever. But I said, what's in Haiti? Well, come to find out, Haiti has one of the largest deposits of uranium in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so
yep.
it's money. Haiti is money.
Yep.
And
sure.
so that's why they keep doing it. And so that's why they keep doing all that kind of stuff they do. Because if they ever stop doing that, Haiti got enough money with the uranium and stuff to do whatever they want to do.
Exactly.
And the power, you don't want that. Because it ain't never made sense to me why they went, after we spent 10 years, NAACP, going to get this man back in there. And then first thing Bush and them did went and knocked him out. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was Papa Doc and Baby Doc now. But, you know, they was on that for that. You know, doing what they was doing. But I'm just saying, yeah, but that's what the deal is. It's like, Haiti has one of the largest deposits of uranium in the world. So that's why they keep knocking them out. Because otherwise, it don't make no sense. They went over to Kenya, talked to the Kenya president, the CIA guy. And so I saw, and then so later on, it came on the news, that they want Kenya to go over and send troops to Haiti, right, to try to help get the stuff straight. And I'm going, because they don't want to send, you know, us over there, you know, our troops over there, because they know, wait a minute, hey, what's going on? You know, why are we going over there? You know, so I'm just saying, but it's about money.
That's what you have to understand. It ain't just we can talk about a bunch of black folks over there that, you know, ain't doing their stuff. No, it ain't, that ain't what it is. It's about, just like everything else, it's about money. And see, and they'll never tell you about the uranium that's over there. Because otherwise, why are they doing all that? It don't make no sense. But it do make sense if you're talking about money.
Well, just like Africa has plenty of resources.
Same thing. They're kicking them out of Africa, right? They're kicking them out of Africa right now. United States, look at Niger. Okay, Niger kicking the United States out of, you make them shut down their drone base in Africa. Look here. They just went over. Look, it didn't even ask the people because they put it. This one just went, just put it over there. They didn't ask people. They just put it over there. And so, you know, so now they kicking them out. And so the United States, they put, you know, they said, well, okay, we stop giving y'all aid. Well, you know, they say, hey, fine, bye, take your stuff and leave. And I'm going, you know, why we got all them bases? We got over 30 bases in Africa. Why we got all them bases in Africa? Don't nobody know about it. Nikki Haley, her husband is over there now.
We know about if you've been in the military any time, and you have, and so has Dr. Hagney, we know that we got military bases all over the world.
Yep.
No, general public don't know it. I know me and you know it, but I'm about the general public don't know.
It's
my point. It's my point. You know, and then we'd be hollering about it, and we plan that we'd be giving all this. Well, you know, we give all this foreign aid. No, you don't. That's military aid. And all this stuff is sitting around protecting corporate profits.
Yep.
It's all. It ain't about keeping nobody from coming and get Shirley McKellar. Then ain't got them people. Ain't what them people trying to do. You know, it's all about protecting the corporate profits and using our money and our military to do it. And it's just wrong. It's just wrong. You know, we shouldn't be doing that. And then if you're gonna do it, then at least tell everybody. Then tell American public that you're doing. That's all I'm saying. Tell everybody what you're doing. Why are you over there doing?
Yeah.
You're stealing. That's what you're doing. And you're helping people steal them people's stuff. I mean, imagine if Africa, if somebody tried to put a base up in Kansas. Hey, what y'all doing? Are we putting
a drone base in Kansas?
Yeah. Did you talk to the government?
That would not happen.
I know it would happen. And so those people are saying, we want y'all to respect us. We're not your children. Y'all don't own us. We know you think you do. But, you know, y'all need to help us industrialize, or y'all need to leave us alone. You know? And so that's where it's at right now with all that. And see, all that's not in the news. And I look at global news, so that's why I'm saying what I'm looking at. And we look at the whole thing. Totally different than what's on the news. Well, you don't hear nothing on the news because they don't tell you. You know.
Yeah.
What about the United States got took to the ICDF court or whatever it is, the same one they took Israel and them too. You know, you ain't see a bunch of that on the news. You ain't see it. But now, you know, Netanyahu acting so bad, obviously a massacre. Until now, you know, you got Schumer going, stop. You know, you need to stop. I mean, look at Schumer. Remember at the beginning, they were just war hawking back. Now all of them, Biden, all of them. Well, hey, wait a minute. And then of course, Netanyahu. He thinks he sees himself as a biblical figure.
Right.
This is what he's supposed to be doing.
Israel, right?
Yeah. You know. In his mind, that's what he's supposed to be doing. So I'm saying, so that's what that is. And so he don't care what the United States say. So they using me and your money over there doing all that stuff right there. And, you know, hey, you know, I don't know what the outcome he's hoping for. But, hey, you know, he'll probably get it.
Yeah.
But it won't be in his favor. That's all I'm going to say. It probably ain't going to be in his favor.
Well, it's going to be very interesting how all of this turns out. At what point in time will somebody surrender and put a flag in the ground and say, you know, enough is enough. This is enough. I mean, just look at today or yesterday, whenever it was, when people were hiding out in the hospitals, and they're going in and destroying a hospital, Hamas. I mean, where's the rules of war where we don't do things like that?
Well,
we don't go into medical institutions and into killing civilians and blowing up their homes. Those are not the rules of engagement when it comes to war.
Well, you know,
go ahead.
Well, there was a larger plan. See, most folks don't remember when we were doing the apartheid thing in South Africa. The Botha regime, them, they were getting all their support and training from Israel now, from Netanyahu now.
Mm-hmm.
So you got that whole dynamic over there working, you know, also. And so, and of course, Black folks, they're getting their training from the Palestinians. And so basically, so you got that whole dynamic over there working. So it's a lot of stuff going on that's a bit more complicated. You know, I was shocked to learn that it's against the law in Israel to get a DNA test. And then I said, okay. I thought all Jewish people were Zionists, and that's not true, you know. And so I learned the process, but all Jewish people are not Zionists, you know. And evidently all Zionists ain't Jewish people, you know, from what it looked like. And so basically, so I'm saying is that. You know, it all has to do with all that was established during that colonial time. They was doing all this stuff we tell you about, dividing Africa up, all that kind of stuff. That all that was put in there then. So when we look at it now, it's like walking up on a car wreck. You know, after the wreck, and it looked like to you this happened, but unless you saw the replay, feel what I'm saying? Once you see the replay, it's, oh, okay, it ain't nothing like I thought. And so that's kind of what that is. That's kind of like. And it's got geopolitical stuff. We got, you know, mm-hmm. the power, man. You got all that stuff. You got all that up in it. So.
Well, you know something, Mr. Arthur. I believe it was 3 or 4, maybe the end of 3, beginning of 4, and I was selected along with one other clinician in America. I was stationed overseas at the time. And it was 16 clinicians around the world that were selected to go to Berlin to discuss the best clinical practices for treating breast cancer. And then 5 of us were selected to speak before the 4th European Congress to present what we had come up with in our research. I was one of those 5. And there were women from everywhere, to include Israel, that could not make decisions about their bodies to even have a mammogram. They had to ask their husband, could they have a mammogram? Because what we obviously decided is that, first of all, a woman needed to do self-breast exams every month. If she didn't have a cycle, she could pick her birthday or one time of the month at the same time of the month, every single month, to do her self-breast exam, and then have an annual breast exam by her physician or her PCP, primary care provider, whether it was a nurse practitioner or a physician. She couldn't even do, in other parts of the world, those women could not do any of those things unless their husbands gave approval. Israel was one of those countries that they couldn't do it. And so we came back, how blessed we are. We actually, it wasn't a Zoom, it was a video
taping throughout to 250 institutions around the world, to include broadcasting at MD Anderson here. We from over there in Berlin to broadcast over to MD Anderson in Houston, Texas. Around the world, 50 million breast cancer institutions around the world. And these women could not decide. They could not say, yes, I want to get a mammogram. Yes, I'm going to see my physician once a year. Go ahead.
Why was that? I know why they can't get a DNA test on the.
Well, the men make decisions for women, and not just their wives, but for women. So what we're doing right now in this country with Roe versus Wade and all of this that just happened, and what is happening even in Texas, in 2003, I saw that with my own personal eyes happening to women in the world. And then we were saying, but check this out. Then so the other clinician, American clinician, it was two of us. The other one was from Philadelphia. And we said, boy, how blessed we are that we live in America, that we can make our decisions about our own self-body. Now, fast forward from 2003 or 2004 to 2024. How many years? Mm-hmm. Say 2004. To 2024. Here we are experiencing the same thing that we said in 2004. We can believe that it was happening in Israel and Iraq and Afghanistan and all those places in the Middle East. My high time changes, right?
But I want you to keep in mind is, remember now, we headed somewhere. No, we headed somewhere, y'all.
Okay. Where are we soaring to? Where are we going?
I'll let you know when we get there. But look here, you just need to know that. You just need to focus on going.
I need to focus on going.
You focus on the going. You know, we're going. These kind of prices. If we're going to be a better America, a better world, this is the kind of stuff that everybody has to see at the same time. And everybody has to, and we got to make decisions at the same time about what that's going to be. Again, go back to about the white women. The white women in America, you know, they could flip the script tomorrow. They could flip the script tomorrow, you know, if they wanted to. You know, and like I said again, you know, it's just, you know, how long are they gonna support the bad boy behavior? You know, the bad leadership behavior, crookedness. And all in service of white privilege. You know, so you know, it's about how long, how many of them are gonna let it go, and then just go for pure hearts and that type of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's a new day. That's all I can tell you. And didn't our ancestors say, Dr. Hagney, keep living? Some of the things that would you say, Dr. Hagney, it's a vicious cycle, just like clothing and fashions and all of that. As the world turns, it's a vicious cycle. It goes around and around and around. That's why ancestors would say nothing new under the sun. Didn't they used to tell us that?
That's right.
There's nothing new under the sun. So some of the things that perhaps we're seeing now, they already saw those things, right? 100 years
right.
ago.
Mm-hmm. It's
yes. My mother would be 107 years of age if she was still living. So she could probably tell us a lot of things.
It's called the fight. It's called the fight. And the fight goes like this. Shirley hit that wall. You know, she didn't knock it down, but a Cherie came and hit it and knocked the hole. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so every time you fight, every time you resist, you leave an imprint. You say, well, I don't see nothing. Trust me, it's there. It's there.
That's right.
Whether you see it or not. And so when we fight, we need to understand if you're looking for wins, W's, and L's, and wins and losses, that's not how it works. So, you know, You know, folks may tell you how it works. It just works like, you know, you do what you can do as best you can, and then and then the next person going, you know, they ain't gonna know why, but they ain't gonna have no issues nowhere, right?
Right.
You know, folks, because you went and did that.
Mm-hmm. You know, we was talking about in a project the other day. You know, that going round and round, that's what we focus on. That's the level we focus on. We don't focus on solutions. You know, if you hear across the board, it would be in education, healthcare, political, whatever. Very seldom you hear an individual talking about what are the solutions. And the point I want to make about a younger generation, our younger people, we're blessed that our younger people are looking at the solutions. You know, they're often these colleges, they're in the PhD program, the master's program.
We
are blessed with our young people. And they they look like us, but they're looking at the solution. You know why? Because they've seen the circle going around and around. They've heard their stories about the going. They want to get off that bandwagon. But they know that they're going to have to put that research in there beyond what we that we imagine, that we experience in our lifetime. They'll come up with terminology and words and explanation of things that we never heard of.
Go ahead.
But that's where they are. If we have our young people in the college and these here, listen to them because they are on target. And they're doing research. See, they're asking the second and third question. See, that's why we have the same results in healthcare, whether it be breast, prostate, cancer, all that. No one very well asks that second question. We accept that first diagnosis, and no one asks that second question. How often we found an individual who took that second step, they found the cancer. We hear that daily. So that's what our younger people are doing. We've been blessed with young people with minds that they're thinking far beyond what we thought or we exposed to, but they understood what grandmama said, that we were in this vicious cycle. They want to get out of the cycle, and they're working to get out of the cycle.
Let me share this with you, gentlemen, and Dr. Hagney, I think you're on to something, because on this past Sunday, after church, we had luncheon for our, what we call our diamondaires at our church. And so the diamondaires have what we call the church children. And so they spend time with them. They select a time that they go and visit with them or whatever. They may go out for lunch or whatever you want to do as a church child that you want to do with your diamondaire. Your diamond means you're of a certain age in the church, right? So this Sunday, we had the Diamondaires annual luncheon, and we had three of our eldest church members that we honored. One was 98, feisty as can be, Miss Harriet Broaden, 98 years of age. Then we had Mr. Eugene Drawhorn. You all may know him, 94, and he was he worked for Southwestern, retired from Southwestern Bell here. And then we had another one, Mrs. Mason. She's 91. So we set their tables up. Each one of them had their table, had all their pictures, their display of their career and all of that. And we just honored them big. So our minister was the keynote speaker for the luncheon. And so he went through all of the decades. And he started with when she was born, the 98-year-old, when she was born, the year she was born, in 1934, I believe it was. And he talked about what was going on in 1934, and then he went on to the 94-year-old. But then he went through every decade, and when he got to the baby boomers, which is the greatest decade to ever exist. And then he got to the Gen Z, and so he said, so the Gen Z, after he said all about them and what they did, and then the Gen Zs jumped up in the back because he would have everybody stand up, whatever your decade was. If you're a baby boomer, you stand up. so forth. And so we were carrying on terribly because we are the baby boomers, right? And we're supposed to be the greatest generation. And then so this Gen Z says, and we're here to clean up the mess that the baby boomers left. and we cracked up. It was so funny. We had a blast. It was amazing. But to hear the wisdom and to hear them talk about, and these people are in there. Well, the 98-year-old is starting to get a little bit of Alzheimer's, dementia, but the other two, sharp as a tack. So they talked about how they rationed food, and I think about all the food that we throw away in this country, right? We throw away mm-hmm. so much food. If we don't want this, we trash it. Mm-hmm. And then they talked about how they had so little food, they didn't waste anything. They rationed their meals even because maybe they came from a larger family where it was a lot of them had to eat. Or they had to miss out of school to go and help while they had large families, right? Because they helped to rear the crops and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. But it was very interesting to hear the wisdom yep. coming from those very senior people. Go ahead. So I thought about it, Dr. Hagney, when you said we don't ask that second question, and listening to those Gen Z said. What they going to do? They cleaning up the mess that we made or that we left, that yep. we didn't complete, is what they said.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So they got that. So that's why we salute people like your granddaughter and the great work that she has done and how that she has to be an example to some that are behind her to do the same thing. If they can do it,
yes.
get that. I don't care. No matter what, I don't care if we're talking about having programs in our schools where they can become welders and all these other things and cosmetic mm-hmm. hairstylists, whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
But we really mm-hmm. need to make sure we push education to our students in some form of the other. And a little bit, even though they may become a welder and all that, but we need to make sure they know a little bit of business, they know a little bit of math, science, arithmetic, mm-hmm. how to read, all of that. They need that core mm-hmm. education, right? Educator.
That's true.
Frat, don't they need that course?
He's educated.
Yeah, he's the educator on the bunch. So,
that's right.
And we know they need that basic education, right, Mr. Arthur?
Well, you know, with AI coming up and all that right there, we need to think about what that is, because I'm not sure if that basic going to get it. If once AI get up in there and start doing what it's going to do, and we need to have more about that. Because
it looks like we're going to get rid of some jobs and things. That's why you, and I'm going to say this, and I'll give this back to you. That's why I refuse, when I see all of those lines shut down and all of those self-helps, I said, I don't work for the supermarket. I don't work for the Costco, Sam's, Walmart.
Every time,
I don't work for you all. So, no, I'm not checking myself out. I'm just not.
And every time. Third, every time I check myself out, I say, they got me again.
Well, I'm not having it. I can tell you that I'm not having it. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to take somebody's job from them.
Well, we need to, but we're going to resist all that, I guess. You know, now we better get started. Cause
I've already started.
You already started.
I'm not checking myself out. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I don't work for any of those stores. Therefore, I'm not checking myself out. You won't check me out. You, the cashier, are going to check me out. You work for this market.
AutoZone. Hey, I went up to AutoZone, and AutoZone had a self-checkout.
No.
Yeah, I was sitting there. And then she's talking about, well, you know, it's going to be a minute, but if you want to check yourself out, what? And of course, you know, they got me again, sir.
They got me again.
Mm-mm.
Nope, not having it. not having it.
Well, what can I do? Well, what can I do, Shirley, to resist? Because I want to join your, I want to join your crusade on. So what are we gonna do?
No, I said, well, you need to open. I wait. Go find where's the one who's checking. I look for that person. They may have one line open, but I'll stand in line before I check me out, so that I can make sure that I'm not taking somebody's job from them, because that's what we're doing.
We need to work on our patience, right? We need to be more patient, y'all, and stand in line.
Very good. Well, I come from the medical world. We come from the civilian, the military world. We hurry up to get on duty, and then we sat and waited until it was time for them to do whatever it was that they needed to do before we moved out, right?
Yes,
that's true.
Hurry up and wait. Hurry up and wait. So I know how to wait. I know how to pull out my book and read. I can read on my telephone while I'm standing in line. Or look at stuff that I said, I'm not picking this up. This very tempting. All of this stuff they got lined up here for me to look at while I'm standing in line. I'm not purchasing it. I'm just going to look at it and read.
I'm going to try it, Shirley. I'm going to try it. Next time I'm in there, I'm going to try it.
You can do it, Ms. Arthur. You can do it. I know I have confidence in you that you can do it. Because we're saving somebody's job. Okay, guys. Well, it's 9:56, and we certainly miss Dr. Odell Carr tonight, and we miss Pastor Michael Cooper tonight. But we're so excited to have Dr. Richard Hagney back with us tonight. And Dr. Hagney, we did during our luncheon on Sunday, we had Donna Jackson. She's a nurse practitioner. We had her to present to the seniors and everybody that was there, the Diamondaires, about the process that we take with our medical on Sunday morning. And so we let them know that when we have someone sick, that we have a person in our technology booth that's looking over the church and seeing if there is anybody that starts to slump or start to get sick or raise their or whatever. And then we flash the light. And then once we flash the light is on the screen up there. And then the medical team, the captain of the medical team for that particular Sunday, will get up and move to the technology booth, and then the technology booth will let us know who that person is that's becoming ill. All of these things take place, and it does not disturb the worship service. No, they don't even know that it's taking place. So then the ushers and our security will apprehend that person and get them out, and 911 is called. Our police officer is the one that calls the 911, and that's Mr. Kevin Mobley. He's our chief police officer at our church for our security, and they secure 911, and we check out the blood pressures and all that and do all the blood sugars and everything, and we have our AED available just in case somebody's having a chest pains, a heart attack that needs to be shocked and all that. We have the complete system. Dr. Hackney can tell you. We have an amazing medical team
And we're modeling other medical units after your main unit. We have implemented there, Corinth and our other church hubs. We're using your model to implement throughout other church hubs. And also I mentioned to you, we have two of your members coming to this Sunday who are prostate cancer survivors. We have a program this Sunday, so we have two of your members coming to discuss. And so that's that partnership. That's what we're moving through all our churches. So y'all are the gold standard. So it's amazing what
y'all
are doing.
We educate. Make sure that our people know all about whatever month it is, if it's sickle cell month, if it's breast cancer month, if it's prostate month, if it's mental health month, we educate them, make sure that they get material and know so that we'll be a well-informed congregation.
Excellent.
Well, that's the
Excellent.
End. Yes. That's the end. It's 9:59, but I just wanted to bring that out. It's been a very, very interesting show tonight, and so we just appreciate, and once again, we salute Dr. Hagney's granddaughter for her great work and all that.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So we'll turn it over to Ms. Rihanna. It's 10 o'clock, and so we look forward to next time, and hopefully we'll have Dr. Candace Mathis next week, if she'll be able to come on with us, and we're talking about the children and how important it is for us to take care of the children in this country, in particular in the state of Texas. Thank you. May God bless you, gentlemen, and have a great rest of the week. And let's talk again.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Rihanna, turn it over to you.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory.
Oh,
to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots we on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh,
glory, glory, glory.
Oh, now the war is not over, victory isn't won, but we'll fight on to the finish, and then when it's all done, we'll cry glory, oh glory, oh, we'll cry glory, oh.
Every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the League of Justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. The biggest weapon is to stay peaceful. We sing, our music is the cuts that we bleed through. Somewhere in the dream we had an epiphany. Now we right the wrongs in history. No one can win a war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory. The coming of the Lord, my eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours.
thank you so much for listening. Be careful out there on tomorrow. We have freeze warning in East Texas. Have a good night. See you next time. Bye for now.